I think many of us, most of us, know Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, Georgia, as the congregation that was led by Martin Luther King Jr. So the longtime connection with a prophetic struggle for civil rights is self-evident. As the powerful Moral Monday movement, born in North Carolina, that we've covered so much, as that movement expanded outside that state, it's only natural that it has taken root in Atlanta under the leadership of Ebenezer Senior Pastor, the Reverend Dr. Raphael Warnock. For a look at the way the struggle for justice is growing in his community, I'm grateful that he's been willing to join us again. Dr. Warnock, welcome back.
Great to be here with you, Welton. Always good to be on your program.
A coalition of activist groups has been active under the Moral Mondays banner in Georgia for several months now. Talk about how it got started in Georgia.
We began this work during the meeting of the General Assembly. Our General Assembly, or the Georgia State Legislature, meets beginning in January of each year. And so we began at the top of the year, and the session just ended about a week ago. During that meeting on Mondays, we would raise a number of issues. We've been focused on a host of issues that have to do with the poor, those who struggle, the working class, women. We've dealt with gun violence, Medicaid expansion, reproductive rights, the struggles for dignity among the LGBTQ community. And so persons who represent all of these different groups, really the cross-section of Georgians across this state, under a moral banner that says that we are all citizens, that we all deserve a seat at the table, that the basic issues around our Constitution and the health of our democracy, that's really what's at stake for us. And so we have been advocating on a host of issues, but we've been focused very sharply over the last few weeks on Medicaid expansion.
Raphael, almost everybody I've talked with in the North Carolina Moral Mondays program has been arrested at one time or another. I see you have been arrested now during protests.
Right.
Others have been arrested. Two questions. One, are you all following fairly closely that North Carolina Moral Mondays model? And secondly, why is everybody getting arrested?
We live in a time, Welton, unfortunately, in which well-financed, well-connected interests have an inordinate voice in the public square. And we saw the terrible decision recently by the Supreme Court, which is giving big money an even larger voice in our democracy. In a real sense, our democracy is in a crisis. And so getting arrested, engaging in acts of civil disobedience, is a way of sharpening the point of our message and raising the conversation. I mean, we were handcuffed, as I said to media outlets a couple weeks ago. For me to be handcuffed for a few hours is really a small inconvenience. What I'm trying to draw attention to is the fact that there are Georgians right now who are handcuffed to poverty, who are stuck on a lonely island of despair, and who do not have access to basic health care in the richest nation in the world, and at a time when a way has been made for them to have health care. And so under the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, federal government has said to Georgia and a host of other states that we will expand Medicaid, we will provide it to persons who are at 138% of poverty, and we will cover 100% of the cost. So the federal government is covering 100% of the cost for the first couple of years, and then they will scale back to 90% of the cost. Georgia right now ranks as having the fifth highest level of uninsured individuals of any state in the union. Our rural hospitals are closing at such a rate that our governor, recognizing the crisis, rather than expand Medicaid, has said that what we ought to do is roll back the Good Samaritan law. The Good Samaritan law passed under President Ronald Reagan says that if you are sick, if you have a heart attack, if you're in a medical crisis, if you can get yourself to the hospital, they have to treat you. And so because we have such a huge number of uninsured individuals in the state of Georgia, that's a huge burden on these rural hospitals, and many of them are closing. And so rather than accept the expansion of Medicaid, which means you would suddenly have hundreds of thousands, 600,000 new clients, if you will, with insurance, the governor said that, no, what we ought to do is get rid of the Good Samaritan law, I guess create a Bad Samaritan law. And so this is for us a moral issue. Acts of civil disobedience are just one of the tools in the arsenal of raising the issue and saying that we will not go away quietly in the night.
My guest is the Reverend Dr. Raphael Warnock, senior pastor at the historic Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, the spiritual home of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Raphael, I want to talk a little bit about your new book. The title is, and I really find it interesting, The Divided Mind of the Black Church, Theology, Piety, and Public Witness. What is the division and how bad is it?
Well, as I speak of the divided mind of the Black Church, I'm not speaking of something that is inherently negative. The book is both a historical and a theological analysis of the heritage, the history, the soul, if you will, of the Black Church. And in the book, I argue that the central tension in Black Christianity, and one could well argue the central tension in Christian faith in general, but I deal with it within the context of the Black Church, is this tension between emphasis on personal spirituality and personal piety on the one hand, and spiritual formation, and social transformation and the spiritual state of the society itself. So that tension between souls and society, individual salvation and social transformation, what I call the slavery of sin and the sin of slavery. And so that tension plays itself out in a peculiar way in the history of the Black Church, because the Black Church is that American church that was born fighting for freedom. It is that church that has insisted that you can't separate bodies from souls, that it was a contradiction for the American missionaries to say to the slaves, well, we saved your souls, we addressed your spiritual formation, but spiritual formation has nothing to do with your social condition. The heritage of the Black Church has represented a clear and decided rejection of that kind of bifurcated and truncated theology. And yet that theology, in strange ways, has its claim even on the Black Church. And so what I attempt to do is to point to our liberationist legacy, the Black Church that gave birth to Martin Luther King Jr., that church that was born fighting against slavery, that church which served as stops along the Underground Railroad. We've had that kind of liberationist legacy, if you will, that kind of radical heritage. But we've also been influenced in great measure by a kind of uncritical evangelical consciousness that does separate souls from the concerns of the society, seeing those as secular issues that people of faith and certainly clergy need not engage. Dr. King, of course, is the clearest manifestation of those who reject that. And so in my book, I'm calling the Black Church back to its liberationist heritage. I'm challenging Black theologians who talk often about social justice but are not necessarily deeply, in my mind, appreciative enough of the spirituality that gives people the courage to fight, to engage that spirituality, to take it seriously, and to have a conversation between head and heart for the sake of the whole community.
That's a tremendous project and a great contribution on your part. I just have to say, Raphael, that I don't like passing judgment on something I'm not a part of. But the white church is afflicted with the same disease. And in some instances, the white church is even worse off. I mean, you know and I know that it was that very bifurcation of the gospel and division between soul and society that had white people lining up to see that black people never did get justice and against the integration movement.
It is a kind of ideology, a doctrinal ideology that justifies slavery and segregation.
Right. So my question is, and it's a question that you will answer in relation to how you see the black church. It's a question that needs to be answered in the white church, and that is, what is your prescription for reconciling these conflicting priorities?
Well, in addition to being a pastor, I'm a trained systematic theologian. And so I see it as a spiritual problem, but I also see it as a theological fallacy, that part of what I call us to as a theologian is to reexamine our understanding of the faith itself and the meaning of the faith. And so toward the end of the book, I engage this in my conclusion and deal with, even from the standpoint of Scripture, I argue that the biblical understanding of salvation is much broader and multivalent than you would know listening to much of the preaching that comes from American pulpits, that we are afflicted, particularly those of us who have a kind of evangelical bent. And most black churches are evangelical, in some sense. There's a kind of born-againism, if you will, that has afflicted the American church, that has truncated the concern for souls and society, and it represents a kind of self-absorbed spirituality that does not recognize that Jesus came preaching good news to the poor, standing in the prophetic tradition of Jeremiah and Amos and Micah, in the tradition of the Exodus, and that somehow we've got to connect the spirit of the Exodus, where salvation literally has to do with the broadening of communal space, the broadening of space, that somehow we have to internalize that. It has to become a part of our spirituality. And when it does, we will not be able to talk about personal salvation without also talking about jobs, about justice, about climate change, about human sexuality and human dignity, about the struggles of the poor, about violence in our communities. We would have to engage all of these things as we embrace a holistic view of salvation.
Raphael, I'm just about out of time, but I want to ask you one more question, and it's a personal question. I have tried to imagine, I think of you and your great ministry in Ebenezer Baptist Church and the history of that congregation and of Dr. King's ministry there. When you stand in that pulpit or when you do active training for social engagement in that sanctuary, what do you feel? What is it like to you personally to feel that tradition and that compulsion?
Well, first of all, it is the high honor of my life to serve as senior pastor of Ebenezer Baptist Church, spiritual home of Martin Luther King Jr. What I have tried to do is to, while recognizing the singular importance of this place, and I've tried not to inhale it, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
People ask me all the time, you know, what does it feel like to stand in Dr. King's shoes? I think the reason we've been able to function and not become overwhelmed by the weight of the whole legacy is because I've recognized from day one that it's really not my job to stand in Dr. King's shoes. I had a father that I looked up to who was also a pastor, and so I remember being a child and trying to walk around in daddy's shoes. You flop around all over the house. You look cute, but you don't get very far. And so my job as pastor of this church is not to walk in Dr. King's shoes, but to stand on his shoulders. And as I do so, I've recognized that even he came to this place and to this spot as part of a tradition that preceded himself. Mm-hmm. His father was a freedom fighter in his own right who fought for voting rights in Atlanta in 1935. He led African Americans through the streets of Atlanta demanding the franchise 30 years before the voting rights law. His maternal grandfather was also an activist. And so when Dr. King stood at the height of his career in the 1960s speaking truth to power to the American nation, he stood as part of a long tradition, and our job, wherever we find ourselves situated, is to carry the baton during our season and then pass it on to others. That's what I've tried to do.
Reverend Dr. Raphael Warnock is senior pastor at Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, Georgia, the spiritual home of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. He is a leader in the Georgia Moral Mondays movement, and he is the author of an important new book entitled The Divided Mind of the Black Church, Theology, Piety, and Public Witness. And Raphael, before I say goodbye, if you can take an observation from a distance for what it's worth, I see you being not burdened by that tradition and that legacy, but inspired and freed by it. And I am so grateful for what you do. I really appreciate you in your ministry, and thank you for taking time to be with us again on State of Belief Radio.
Absolutely. Thank you so very much.